This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, this is the Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanisan. Disruption has been a common theme in the last decade. We've seen it in the transport and tourism industries with the rise of Airbnb and Uber. Now, will we see it in education? Today, I have Raghav Gupta, Director of India and Asia Pacific for Coursera on the show. Welcome, Raghav.
Thank you, Roshan. Great to be here today with you.
Now, Coursera is an online learning startup worth about $1 billion at this point. They currently offer over 3,000 courses in over 300 specializations and include partners like Columbia University, Johns Hopkins, and the University of Michigan. At this point, it looks like over 40 million people have now taken classes online through Coursera. Now, Raghav, what makes you different from, say, another Khan Academy?
Yeah, that's a great starting question, Roshan. So, you know, let me share the context. Coursera was founded with the vision to transform lives through learning. You know, we were founded by two Stanford University professors. And our objective has been, and our mission has been, to bring learning from some of the best universities and industry partners around the world. There are 190 of them currently, to learners around the world. A lot is changing in the workplace. You mentioned this briefly in your introduction, that technology is impacting work, it's impacting business, it's impacting lives. And no longer can all of us, you know, just limit to learning in schools and in colleges, and then assume that the rest of the working life will just be about work and not about learning. So we call this lifelong learning. And what Coursera is bringing to learners around the world, and there are currently a large number of them, 40 million people around the world, some of this best quality learning from some of the world's best quality institutions.
Raghav, that sounds great. And on paper, online education looks great. It helps democratize education by making it more accessible. But as good as that sounds, are we sacrificing quality for accessibility here?
Yeah, I think, you know, the online space allows a lot of innovation to happen. And I don't think Coursera views this as an either-or between online versus classroom. The reality is that today, accessibility in education, especially in developing countries in Asia-Pacific region, remains a big challenge, right? So I don't think we tend to view this as, are we replacing something else? I think what our focus is that to a lot of people where high quality education may not be available today, can we bring that high quality education? And also what is now feasible because of innovation on the online space is a lot of learning which can be personalized to the individual, which can also allow interaction with people around the world, which can also allow very personalized feedback in terms of an individual's strengths and weaknesses on any particular subject are now possible. So I think that's the way we are approaching it. And so far, we are seeing some very strong traction with individuals, with learners in the APAC region.
Okay. And, you know, one of the big things when it comes to education, now, yes, it's all about learning, but it's also about essentially career development, right? In comparison to big names like Michigan or Columbia, how is Coursera approaching employability?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, when we ask learners who come to Coursera, why do they, you know, take our courses and our specializations? The broad, consistent answer that we get is learners come to Coursera to learn, but also to prosper. Mm-hmm. And what we see is that across the 11 domains of content on the Coursera platform, the most popular ones are the ones which result in career impact and which result in employability. And the most popular domains, and this applies to the Asia-Pacific region and it applies to Malaysia as well, are in the domains of business, technology, and data science. So I think learner behavior on our platform consistently tells us that that's what people value, the learning, but also the impact on careers.
Okay, and you're seeing more employers recognize Coursera's certifications in these areas?
Absolutely, absolutely. So what's happened is over the last 3 years, we launched the Coursera for Enterprise platform. And as a part of that, you know, we work with businesses, we work with governments, and we work with universities to bring learning on the Coursera platform to their, you know, to their work groups and to their employees and students. And what we've seen is very quickly around the world today, we work with about 1,900 enterprises. So companies and businesses are definitely recognizing the learning on Coursera. What we also see is that individuals love to post their certifications on platforms like LinkedIn after they have taken a Coursera course, because it's a strong signaling to potential employers about their skills in a particular topic. And today, Coursera certificates on LinkedIn are the second highest in number globally. And that clearly is a strong signaling mechanism in terms of the quality of these certifications on the platform.
Well, that's very interesting. Do you have any examples, say, in Asia Pacific or even in Malaysia, about companies that are more more attracted to these sort of certifications?
So globally, and I would say in Asia as well as in Malaysia, we are seeing those businesses adopt Coursera faster where there is bigger impact of technology. Because, you know, that's where the stronger need for reskilling or upskilling of the workforce exists. And these are businesses like financial services and banking. These are businesses in telecom, in technology, in manufacturing, and so on. As an example, in Malaysia, we work with five companies today. We work with PBB, Public Bank Berhad, and, you know, they're taking some cutting-edge Coursera courses to upskill their workforce, because in the banking space, digital transformation is changing the kind of skills that employees need to have.
Okay, do you have any other companies you're working with in Malaysia, or is Public Bank the biggest one at this point?
So like I mentioned, we work with five companies. We also work with one of the government agencies in Malaysia. This is the MDEC, the Malaysia Digital Economy Corporation. And, you know, what they've been wanting to do on Coursera is train individuals on data science and related topics around digital transformation. And this has been a fairly significant government initiative to upskill, you know, their employee base as well as their larger constituents on the Coursera platform.
So this is looking like a form of lifelong learning. So the learning doesn't stop when you end university, but you keep need to upskilling yourself going forward as, I guess, things change, right? Things are, there's so much disruption going on. But is this more, is the focus simply on upskilling? And is this more for hobbyists instead of serious academics?
So I think we see, you know, people who are interested in topics more from a hobby standpoint do definitely come to the Coursera platform. But I think what we see, the core of the learners who come to the Coursera platform are people who are looking for serious career impact, and especially in the domains of business, technology, and data science. We also see people who come to the Coursera platform for personal interest topics like music and arts and learning language. You could learn, you know, history of rock music 1 and 2 on the Coursera platform. So there are lots of good topics and content around, you know, arts as well. But the core is around business technology and data science for serious career impact.
Right. Do you have any numbers or percentages with regards to the number of people who take it up for hobbies versus the serious employability side?
I don't have exact numbers top of my head. My sense is more on the hobby side, this would be in single digits, maybe, you know, 3-5%. But I would say the serious career impact kind of learners are, you know, in the larger 80-90% kind of impact.
I'm speaking to Raghav Gupta, Director of India and Asia Pacific for Coursera. After this, we're going to explore the competition that Coursera faces as well as its expansion in Asia Pacific. This is The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm speaking to Raghav Gupta, Director of India and Asia Pacific for Coursera. Earlier, we were talking about Coursera's education philosophy and its role in the employability market. Now we're going to dive into the competition that Coursera faces as well as its outlook for Asia Pacific. Now, Raghav, let's take a closer look at Asia Pacific. In this region, what is Coursera's biggest market?
So I would say the larger countries in Asia Pacific are where we have larger markets. You know, out of our 40 million people on the Coursera platform, the single largest market is the US with about 9 million people. After that, India has close to 4 million learners on the Coursera platform. China has close to 2.5 million people. And then, you know, countries like Australia, even Singapore, actually smaller country, but a lot of learners on the Coursera platform. In Malaysia, I think we have a significant opportunity to grow. Currently, we have about 200,000 learners in Malaysia on the Coursera platform, on the consumer platform. And as I was mentioning earlier, five companies where we have Coursera for Business relationships. But given the size of the country and given the need for education, I feel that there's significant growth opportunity for us to bring this high-quality education to Malaysia as well.
Now, all these different countries in Asia-Pacific, I assume they have very different ways in which you had to adapt to these markets. First and foremost, they're very different from the US. How have you had to adapt to Asia-Pacific?
I would say there are probably three or four key themes that emerge, Roshan. I think learners who come to Coursera are probably looking for career impact more than, let's say, counterparts in the Western world. So we see a higher concentration of Coursera courses around career-related topics being taken. Second, just from a value sensitivity standpoint, learners are looking for a bigger value being delivered to them when they take Coursera courses. As a part of our mission, Coursera does offer some amount of learning without making any payment on our platform. And we see financial aid being used quite a bit in this region as well. So that's the second differentiation. And third, from just the product usage standpoint, you know, APAC, of course, is a very mobile-led market. And the usage of our mobile apps is higher as percentage when compared to, let's say, the US or to Europe. So those, to me, would be some of the key themes that emerge.
The two very interesting points I picked out there, one being the use of mobile in this region. We've heard that before with other technology companies, but also the difference in terms of career focus in Asia. In terms of a rough percentage, is there more of a hobbyist leaning in the US as compared to Asia Pacific?
Yeah, I would say this is probably in the 5 to 10 percentage points ballpark that Asia Pacific would be higher in terms of seeking career impact courses by that kind of a degree. So that would probably be the difference that we're seeing.
Right, it's a relative difference.
Correct.
Now, speaking of the mobile usage, has internet accessibility in Asia Pacific been a challenge for you?
I would say over the last 2-3 years, access to the internet as well as costs of data have largely come down in APAC. And we're not seeing large challenges around access per se. I think an area that I would like to flag here is a lot of content on the Coursera platform is in English. And the APAC region needs us to make that content available in local languages as well. Mm-hmm. So what we are more focused on now is to bring some of the content in local languages. As an example, either as audio translation or as subtitle translations. We currently have about 300 courses out of the 3,000 courses available in Chinese language, for example. And we want to be able to do this for more Southeast Asian languages as well as we move forward. So that's one area. I don't think data and internet access is that big of a challenge anymore.
It's more the demographic differences and language barriers.
That's right.
And speaking of the different languages, are there any new markets that you're looking to enter in the next year or so?
As a edtech or an online education platform, we are, you know, pretty much present in all large countries where education is needed. The idea is not so much to enter new markets per se, but to grow our presence. And, you know, my colleagues and I out of the India office, who are responsible for Asia as well, have been working towards bringing Coursera to enterprises, to governments, and to universities in the region. So growing our presence and serving our purpose of bringing education to learners across APAC is what we will continue to work on.
And Raghav, moving forward, I want to talk about competition for a little bit. You've earlier stated that you're not really in competition with traditional players like universities, but they are the providers of content to your platform. So what happens when big universities, let's say Columbia or Michigan, decide to create their own platform? What happens there?
So we have two kinds of partnerships with universities, Roshan. On one side, you know, some of the world's best universities are the ones who are authoring content on the Coursera platform. When Coursera launched about 7 years ago, this content was largely MOOCs or massive open online courses, which were shorter courses. And over the last few years, the kind of content that universities produced has also deepened. So now we have specializations, we have certifications, and we have full online degrees from universities on our platform. Currently, there are 14 online degrees, including from Ivy League universities like the University of Pennsylvania, who now have a master's in computer science and IT program on Coursera. And universities see a lot of value in continuing to do this because of the kind of reach and access that Coursera brings, you know, 40 million learners around the world. And on the other side, what we're also starting to do over the last few years is seeing universities consume content on the Coursera platform, right? So as an example, Manipal University in India provides learning on the Coursera platform to 20,000 students. And these could be, you know, students who want to learn topics who are not being taught to them in the classroom, or students who want to, you know, along with what is being taught in the classroom, have the opportunity to learn from some of the world's best. So given, you know, our partnerships on the content authoring side and on the content consumption side, you know, my sense is that both of these partnership domains will grow. I think with universities, we are a strong complementing partner to both creation as well as consumption of content.
Okay, and now the business model and the financial viability. 2018 saw you bring in some $140 million. Now, that's a lot of money. But as companies like Uber have shown us, right, revenue is one thing and profitability is an entirely different question. Is your current offering a profitable offering?
So currently, from a business strategy standpoint, we are focused on growth, given the size of learner needs that we are working on serving. That being said, at a unit economics level, our unit economics are strong. And I don't think we have any major worries there. Our sense is that there's lots to be done across all the three pillars of our platform at a consumer level, at a university partner level, as well as an enterprise level. And that's where our current focus is going to stay.
Okay, and is there a timeline to profitability?
That's not something that we currently share, Roshan. But like I was saying, the unit economics are quite healthy.
Okay, and is there a road to IPO?
Well, I think when the timing is right, possibly. But it's, again, not something that we've been actively focused on. Currently, there's a lot of growth that we are focused on, and that's going to be the current focus, especially for the APAC market.
So the focus being right now just an expansion of your market share?
That's correct.
So I'm guessing pricing would play a very important role at this point in terms of growing that market share. So when it comes to the courses, do the universities have a say in how you price your courses?
Yeah, this happens as a part of the partnerships that we have. But just to give you a sense of how pricing works, I mean, what our role is, right, and we spoke about this at the start, that as a part of democratizing high-quality education, what we want to do is to bring the world's best universities at very, very affordable prices. So courses, which is the smallest unit of learning, which is about 10, 12 hours, are at about $50 subscription price per month. These can stack up into specializations. So a series of four courses, you know, $200 could result in a full specialization in a topic like technology or data science. We also now have professional certificates, master track certificates, which are deeper content, deeper forms of learning. And these tend to be in the $2,000 to $4,000 prices. And then online degrees tend to be in the $20,000 to $22,000, $23,000 price points, which are much lower than, let's say, what it would cost to go to on campus. So that's the kind of domain of pricing across the different learning products that are now available on the Coursera platform.
Okay, and since market share is the current priority, is there a risk that your customers will become price sensitive in later stages?
Like in any other product, Roshan, I think learners want to look at value. And we feel that the value that we're bringing to them, you know, for example, a degree at 1/4 or 1/3 of the price of being on campus, or a MOOC course at about $50. Today, the reason we are seeing growth is because learners see value. But of course, we are looking at what the reaction to pricing is, and we will adapt as is needed.
And one of your rivals, Udemy, has this, it seems like the middle ground between YouTube and Coursera, right? They have practitioners and experts that do courses. Is that something that Coursera is going to look at in the longer term?
I mean, if you look at our approach and what we are good at and what we know works, is education from some of the world's best universities with a credential from that university is where we see learners seeking value. And that's what we will continue to grow, right? We will always have that kind of content available on our platform.
Speaking about customers, Coursera for Business is something that you're looking at. How important are enterprises and governments to Coursera's revenue?
Yeah, this is an area of big focus for us. Over the last 3 years since we launched Coursera for Business, we've seen very strong traction. Coursera for Business has very quickly scaled to 1,900 organizations around the world. With governments, we work, like I was saying, with the government of Malaysia, we work with the government of India, we work with the government of Egypt, the government of Pakistan, the government of Singapore. And working with governments, especially in developing countries where higher education infrastructure may not be sufficient, is quite important. We are also bringing the Global Skills Index and the benchmarks from that to countries around the world, because the idea is not just to provide learning, but learning on the right topics. So, for example, we find that proficiency in math skills in India is very strong. But in data science domain, there's a long way to go for the country to build skills. And we are providing some of that benchmarking and guidance to the government to be able to invest in the right domains. So in summary, I would expect that Coursera for Business, as well as Coursera for Governments, is going to be a big thrust area going forward as well.
Do you foresee these two categories becoming a big priority for Coursera going forward?
They already are, Roshan. I think from a revenue standpoint, it's a little hard to predict what the share will be, mm-hmm. but they already are. And I think we will continue to build on this. What we will add as a big domain is working with universities. We started doing that over the last 2 years. We've seen some strong success. So bringing Coursera learning to university students, to faculty, to alumni is a new thrust area that we will add more muscle to going forward.
Do you have any stats available for a comparison between government, business, and consumer revenue streams?
You know, so for the last 7 years, we've been a consumer platform, and Coursera for Business was launched 3 years ago. So a large chunk of our revenue does come from the consumer business. But when I look at the enterprise business, including the government business, that's where we are seeing very strong growth. Mm-hmm. It's growing at upwards of 100% around the world. Percentage shares are still smaller, but the growth has been very, very strong.
And that sounds very promising. And I'm sure it will be a big part of Coursera in the longer term. Raghav, thank you so much for spending this time with us. I've been speaking to Raghav Gupta, Director of India and Asia Pacific for Coursera. This is The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Now with wider 4G LTE reach. Baru la bes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.